Welcome to Ekatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a book that, well, it really shook things up in the 20th century. William Golding's Lord of the Flies from 1954. A tough read, maybe, but important.
Definitely important.
We want to go beyond just, you know, the plot summary. We're looking at it as this stark allegory, really picking apart how that fragile thing we call civilization can just crumble.
And you absolutely have to understand Golding himself to get the sheer force of this book. It wasn't just an idea he had.
No.
No, he was in the Royal Navy during World War II. He lived through D-Day, the sinking of the Bismarck. He saw the horror up close.
That kind of experience, it changes you fundamentally, doesn't it?
Completely. It shattered any belief he might have had in sort of humanity's innate goodness. He realized the evil wasn't out there. It was in here.
Is that where that famous quote comes from about evil?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He said, anyone who lived through those times without understanding that man produces evil as a bee produces honey must have been blind or wrong in the head. Pretty blunt.
Wow. Yeah, that sets a grim tone. So the novel is, what, a direct response to something?
It is. He was deliberately pushing back against those more optimistic Victorian adventure stories, you know, like the Coral Island,
yeah,
where British boys land on an island and naturally build a perfect little society.
Right, the noble savage idea almost, but with schoolboys.
Golding's take was the dark mirror image. He basically said, no, leave them alone, and this is what really happens. It's a rebuttal.
Okay, let's get into that premise then. The setup, the idyllic trap, as you called it before we started.
Right. So picture this. British schoolboys, different ages, 6 to 12 maybe, they're being evacuated during a war. Their plane crashes.
And they end up on this gorgeous, totally isolated tropical island. Lush, perfect, untouched.
Exactly. It looks like paradise.
Yeah.
A blank slate. A chance to build something new. Something maybe better than the adult world they left behind.
But that's the trap, isn't it? The core conflict kicks in almost immediately.
Instantly. The whole story becomes this battlefield between two fundamental human instincts. On one side, you have civilization, the urge for order, rules, morality, thinking ahead.
And on the other?
Savagery, yep. Pure instinct. The desire for power, for hunting, violence, getting what you want now.
And Golding's terrifying question is, which one wins when there are no adults, no police, no rules? Is the savage impulse just stronger? Is it what we really are underneath?
That's the chilling core of it. And he gives these forces faces right away. You've got Ralph trying to hold on to reason, democracy, the hope of rescue.
He's the elected leader, right? Tries to keep the signal fire going.
Yes. And then there's Jack. He's all about the hunt, the power, the tribe. He becomes this sort of proto-authoritarian figure very quickly.
And we can't forget the others. Piggy.
Ah, Piggy. The voice of intellect, logic, science. He remembers the rules from back home.
And Simon. He's different.
Very different. Simon is more intuitive. Spiritual, maybe. He's the one who senses the real truth, the uncomfortable truth. These four aren't just kids. They're like walking symbols of these conflicting forces.
Let's dig into them, then. Starting with Ralph. He gets chosen as chief almost by default because he has the conch.
He finds the conch shell, yeah. And Piggy realizes its power. It becomes the symbol of order, of the right to speak, of democratic process. Ralph's whole focus is practical. Build shelters, keep that signal fire going. That's their only link to the outside world to rescue.
But he seems almost naive. He keeps thinking if they just follow the rules, things will work out.
That's his tragedy. He represents the hope for rational order, but he's leading a group that's rapidly losing interest in rationality. He can't understand why the others prefer hunting and chanting to, you know, building huts. His arc is one of disillusionment. He sees democracy fail not because the system is flawed, but because people just don't want it enough.
If Ralph is that fragile hope, Jack is the force that actively tears it down. What drives him? Is it just ego?
It starts maybe with wanting to be leader, but it becomes about dominance, pure and simple. The thrill of the hunt, the power over the others.
And there's that key moment, the mask.
Oh, absolutely. The painted face. That's crucial. He uses charcoal and colored clay. Golding writes that the mask liberates him from shame and self-consciousness.
Liberates him. It hides him.
It does more than hide. It allows him to shed his identity, his learned inhibitions, as an English schoolboy. He can become something else entirely, the savage chieftain. The mask allows the primal self to take over. It's terrifying, really.
It suggests our conscience is partly performative, tied to being seen and recognized.
That's a chilling way to put it, but yeah. Once the mask is on, the internal sensor seems to switch off, which leads us neatly to Piggy.
The intellectual, overweight, asthmatic, needing glasses, and relentlessly bullied.
He's the outsider. But his glasses, they're incredibly symbolic. They represent the science, clarity of thought, and critically, they're the tool used to create fire, the very thing Ralph needs for the signal.
But his intellect makes him vulnerable, doesn't it?
Utterly.
Mm-hmm.
He clings to logic and rules in a world that's rapidly abandoning both. He keeps saying, what are the grown-ups going to think? But there are no grown-ups. His reliance on reason becomes his weakness when faced with brute force. The way he's treated foreshadows the island's complete rejection of intellect.
And then Simon. Quieter, seems a bit odd to the others. What's his role in this allegory?
If Piggy is external knowledge, like science, Simon is internal wisdom, intuition. He's almost a Christ-like figure, a seer. He's the only one who really grapples with the central mystery.
The beast.
Exactly. While everyone else is terrified of some monster lurking in the jungle, Simon starts to understand, intuitively, that the beast isn't something out there.
It's inside them.
Precisely. He senses that the darkness is part of human nature itself. His journey is that lonely, painful path of the prophet who sees a truth nobody wants to hear.
Okay, so we have the players. Let's trace the descent. It happens fast, right?
Shockingly fast.
Mm.
In the first couple of chapters, they elect Ralph. They establish the Contra rule. There's this initial burst of, okay, let's make a society.
But it goes wrong quickly.
Oh, yeah. The first attempt to light the signal fire, using Piggy's glasses, it's chaotic. They set a whole patch of the forest ablaze, totally uncontrolled.
And isn't that when?
Yes. The first death. The little boy with the mulberry-colored birthmark just disappears in the fire, never seen again. It's an immediate grim omen, a sign that their attempts at order are already failing, with fatal consequences.
Then the split really widens. Ralph's focused on shelters, long-term survival.
Right, he and Simon are trying to build huts, something practical. But Jack, he's obsessed. The hunt is all that matters. He needs to kill a pig.
And this obsession leads to a critical failure.
The biggest failure yet. Jack pulls the boys assigned to the signal fire away to join his hunt. And wouldn't you know it, right then.
Yeah.
A ship appears on the horizon.
Oh no, they miss their chance.
They miss it. The fire's out, the ship sails away. When Ralph confronts Jack, Jack doesn't apologize. He lashes out. He hits Piggy hard, knocks his glasses off.
And breaks one of the lenses.
Breaks a lens. It's more than just bullying. It's a direct symbolic assault on intellect, on clarity, on the tool they need for survival and rescue. Things are getting significantly darker now.
And the fear starts to take over completely. The beastie.
Yeah, the fear becomes palpable. Little Buns having nightmares, older boys whispering.
Yeah.
And Jack exploits this fear masterfully, gives him power. This is when he openly challenges Ralph's authority.
The famous line.
Bollocks to the rules. We're strong. We hunt. If there's a beast, we'll hunt it down. We'll close in and beat and beat and beat. He's offering protection through violence, rejecting democracy outright. The conch starts to lose his power.
And then something happens that seems to confirm their fears.
Right. A dead airman, shot down in a battle high above, parachutes onto the island and gets tangled in the trees on the mountaintop. The wind catches the parachute.
Making the body seem to move.
Exactly. The boys who see it in the dark are terrified. This, they think, is the beast. Ironically, it's a relic from the adult war, the very thing they escaped, now fueling their own descent into savagery. It gives Jack all the justification he needs.
Which brings us to, arguably, the philosophical core of the book, Chapter 8.
Gift for the Darkness. Jack has fully broken away now. He's formed his own tribe, the Hunters. They kill a sow, gruesomely,
yeah.
And then they do something ritualistic.
The offering.
They cut off the pig's head, mount it on a sharpened stick, and leave it as a sacrifice, a gift for the beast. It's covered in blood, dripping, attracting swarms of flies.
The Lord of the Flies. Beelzebub, a name for the devil.
Precisely. And who encounters this horrific idol?
Simon.
Simon. He's hiding nearby, maybe having an epileptic fit, it's unclear, but he has this hallucination, this conversation with the pig's head, and the Lord of the Flies tells him the truth.
What does it say?
It mocks his idea of an external beast. It says something like, fancy thinking the beast was something you could hunt and kill. You knew, didn't you? I'm part of you. Close, close, close. I'm the reason why it's no-go, why things are what they are.
Wow. The evil isn't out there in the jungle. It's in us.
That's the terrible revelation. The beast is human nature itself.
And like so many truth tellers, Simon pays the price.
Tragically.
Mm-hmm.
He climbs the mountain, discovers the dead pilot, realizes the beast is just a corpse. He needs to tell the others to free them from their fear. He stumbles down towards the beach where Jack's tribe is.
What are they doing?
They're in a frenzy, chanting, dancing, reliving the pig hunt. There's a storm brewing. It's dark, chaotic. Simon bursts out of the forest.
And they don't recognize him.
In their hysteria, they think he is the beast. They descend on him. Claws, teeth, sticks. They tear him apart.
Oh, God. They kill the one person who understood.
It's the point of no return. They've murdered the truth bearer in a ritualistic frenzy. Civilization is well and truly dead now. But the final act, the complete eradication of reason, is still to come.
Piggy's death.
Chapter 11. Ralph, Piggy, and the few loyal twins, Sam and Eric, make a desperate last stand. They go to Castle Rock, Jack's fortress, to try and reason with him, to get Piggy's stolen glasses back.
Still clinging to the idea of rules, even now.
Piggy literally holds up the conch, the last symbol of their old life. And he makes this incredibly brave final plea. He shouts over the savages, which is better and have rules and agree, or to hunt and kill?
A direct challenge. Logic versus savagery.
And the answer is brutal and immediate. Roger, Jack's sadistic lieutenant, who'd been throwing stones earlier but deliberately missing.
Mm.
Now he leans on a massive lever, dislodging a huge boulder poised above.
No.
It strikes Piggy, knocks him off the cliff, down onto the rocks below. Goling describes his head splitting open. It's graphic. And at the exact same moment,
the conch
shell, which he was holding, exploded into 1,000 white fragments and ceased to exist. The simultaneous destruction of the thinker and the symbol of democracy. It's devastating.
So Ralph is alone now, hunted.
Completely alone. The tribe sets the entire island on fire to smoke him out, to hunt him down like an animal. Paradise is literally turned into an inferno.
But the fire, that's the irony, isn't it?
The ultimate irony. This final act of total savagery, the uncontrolled destruction, creates a massive plume of smoke that attracts a ship, a naval cruiser.
Rescue arrives, an adult enters the scene.
A British naval officer walks onto the beach, sees these small, painted, spear-carrying boys, the island burning behind them, and he's just bewildered.
What does he say?
He sees Ralph, the leader figure, and asks, slightly embarrassed, if they've been having fun and games. He assumes it's some sort of elaborate game gone slightly wrong. He completely misses the horror.
That naivete is staggering. The adult world is just as blind.
It implies the same potential for savagery exists even in the civilized adult world that sent the war plane overhead in the first place. Ralph, seeing the officer, the symbol of the world he lost, finally breaks down.
The final lines.
He weeps for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true, wise friend called Piggy. It's utterly heartbreaking. He's not crying because he's saved. He's crying because of what he's learned about humanity.
Which brings us squarely to the themes that resonate so strongly today. First, obviously, the fragility of civilization.
Absolutely. Golding shows it's just this thin crust, easily broken. It's not our default state. It requires constant effort, rules, reinforcement. Take that away.
And the darkness bubbles up. Linked to that is the danger of the mob.
Definitely. The masks, the chants, they allow the boys to lose their individual sense of self, their responsibility. They become part of a single savage entity.
Anonymity allows atrocity. Like Simon's murder.
Exactly. No single boy feels solely responsible because they all did it together. It's a terrifying look at group psychology.
So, the lasting impact. It's not just a story about bad kids.
Not at all. The horror is precisely because they are ordinary kids. It forces us to confront the potential for darkness, not in some external monster, but within the human heart itself, within our hearts.
That loss of innocence, Ralph feels, is universal. The realization that the capacity for evil isn't an aberration, it's fundamental.
That's the sobering takeaway. Maintaining decency, order, civilization, it takes work. Constant conscious work.
The battle isn't really on the island, or between nations even, it's internal.
It's within every single person. Golding leaves us with that deeply uncomfortable but essential truth.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.